Good morning. We'll begin the Ag Policy Committee this morning. Welcome. We have a fairly full agenda here, so we're going to go ahead and get started. We do have a quorum, so I'm going to just ask, you know, Representative Petersburg, once again, would you like to move the minutes from the last meeting?
I shall be glad to move the minutes of their last meeting.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions or comments? Changes? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. All right. And we are excited today because it is Dairy Day at the Capitol. So we welcome all of our Minnesota milk producers and dairy farmers and those that work hard every single day, 24/7, 365 days a year, to bring us the milk, yogurt, cottage cheese, all those good things that we get from milk. So ice cream. Oh, ice cream, of course. Yes. So I think we're just going to go ahead and get started. We have Pat Luneman, who's going to kind of kick it off for us today. Good morning, Mr. Luneman.
Good morning.
State your name for the record.
Patrick Luneman, president of the Minnesota Milk Producers.
Very good.
Thank you, Chair Poppy and Ag Committee. Good to be here this morning. And today is Dairy Day at the Capitol, as you stated. And so you'll see us throughout the halls today. Hopefully we have meetings set up with you, and hopefully our farmers can make it up from the snow in the southern part of the state and out of the cold in the north. So that you know, this morning we have brought treats for you. We have some goodies in the cooler for the committee and anyone else in attendance at the meeting this morning. There's some low-fat white milk, low-fat chocolate milk, some flavored yogurt, and there's spoons for the yogurt. There's a little milk can behind that sign there that's got spoons in, so please feel free, if you didn't have breakfast, come and have some yogurt, and we're glad to provide this for you. I want to give you a brief overview of the dairy industry, and when I'm finished, with your permission, Madam Chair, we will be playing a video for you of the Minnesota Milk 2013 Producer of the Year. It's a wonderful video. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Minnesota remains a relative powerhouse in our nation's dairy industry. We know we're not Wisconsin, but our dairy industry in Minnesota is still larger than Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, and North Dakota combined. Not individually, but combined. So that's reason to take note of how significant our industry is to the state of Minnesota. We have 460,000 dairy cows in our fine state, and according to a Minnesota Department of Agriculture study that was done in 2010, each dairy cow generates approximately $25,000 of economic activity, which when you do the math totals $11.6 billion of economic generation in our state. While the trend of losing farms continues, our cow numbers are relatively stable. And we have been seeing over the last number of years modernization going on within our industry. Producers are putting in parlors, whether they're large parlors or swing parlors that are economical for smaller farms. We're seeing a number of milking robots being put onto farms. It's happening throughout our state. They're amazing, amazing machines. And as we all know, robots will transform our world, and they're already transforming the dairy world. On my farm, I don't have milking robots, but I have calf feeding robots. So the little calves come up, and they're allowed to drink so much milk in a given time period, and they just kind of take care of themselves, just like Mother Nature would take care of them if they were on Mama. We have all kinds of different types of farms in Minnesota. We're diversifying, meeting the needs of the marketplace. We've got, of course, our large commercial farms. We still have our traditional farms. We've got the rotational grazing is taking place, the organic farms. There's a number of those, and that keeps growing. So we're really positioning our farms for the future in Minnesota. But, of course, there's always room to grow more and improve. Of course I'm here today because there are some issues within our industry. And one of the items that I want to talk about this morning is our competitive sales tax policy. And our request at Minnesota Milk Producers Association is a repeal of the sales tax on equipment repair services. This is part of the business-to-business tax. Discussion is going on around the Capitol about the repeal for that. I want to tell you that on my farm, I have seen on the invoices that I get from my vendors, you know, it's $10 here, $20 there, $100 there. It's that little line, Minnesota sales tax, that's added to the farm equipment repair bills that I get. And while it's burdensome to me, I want you to know that it's really, as we analyze it, it's most burdensome to many of our small operators and younger operators that are operating with older equipment, maybe don't have extra staff on their farm to do the repairs, and they're calling in people to do the repairs for them. And we just believe that this is a tax that's a regressive tax. Of course, we've heard the state forecast is that we have a surplus. Governor Dayton, even to me personally, has said we need to repeal this tax. Let's get it done. Another key issue is that at Minnesota Milk Producers, we support a competitive overtime pay policy. And when I talk about competitive, I'm talking about how are we in relationship to the states around us, to others in our great country. Currently in Minnesota, ag operates under a 48-hour work week, which means that after an ag employee works 48 hours, that we pay time and a half. Now, there was an initiative in the last session to exclude this ag exemption and change the ag work week from 48 back to 40. Now, this has been on hold up until this session. I want you to know that Minnesota is already an island as we compare ourselves to our surrounding states. All of our neighboring states operate under what is the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, which means that for agriculture, you don't have to pay employees overtime at all. There is no limit. There is no 48 hours or 40 hours or 60 hours. They're just paid a straight wage. Now, at Minnesota Milk Producers, we're not proposing that we go to that standard. We don't believe that's right. We ask that you keep the ag exemption, the 48-hour work week, in place. And the minimum wage discussion that's going on in the legislature, we are assuming that the 48-hour work week will be part of that discussion, and we ask you to petition the conferees or whoever's involved in that process to keep the 48-hour ag work week. Some updates. Last year, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency proposed some rules changes, and Minnesota milk producers engaged in the hearing process. I personally testified in front of an administrative law judge, and after the judge went through the full process, the judge did side with the Minnesota milk producers and some of the other agricultural groups on some of our proposed changes to what MPCA had proposed. Now, our hope is that Minnesota Pollution Control will take the administrative law judge's decision into account, as Pollution Control currently is rewriting the rules. And that will be out sometime this year, and we will keep you informed as to what is going on with that process. The Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Authority, which was funded by our legislature, the board members have been put in place for about a year now. They have met a number of times, and they are engaged in refining the mission and the scope of this project. At Minnesota Milk, we have been engaged in the process. We believe that the University of Minnesota must be involved to provide land-grant level cutting-edge research to lead our state's industry. Also, the MinSCU system has a role in training our future talent. And we need industry to rally to support this mission, especially the research mission, and assist in the consumer education portion. Now, We at Minnesota Milk have had some discussions with the university in the last 2-3 months. I would say that I'm excited about some of the ideas that are coming forward, and that I hope that this mission will move forward. But ultimately, it's the Minnesota Department of Ag and the Dairy Authority that must drive this project forward. So you as legislators, we ask that you be supportive in this process, that the governor and the Department of Ag and the authority move forward. As a final comment this morning, I want to remind you that our dairy industry is a significant part of our state's economy. And when we combine with all of Minnesota's agriculture, we have an economic engine to be proud of. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee, and I'm willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Luneman. Are there any questions?
It's too early in the morning.
Yes.
Thank you for bringing the tweets as well. Just one comment, the 48-hour work week, I do sit on the conference committee, and that is definitely the position of the House. And so that's our intention to keep that in place.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. So just so you know that. Thank you. Did you want to show the video now, or were you looking to show the video after the other?
Would you like it now?
If it works now and you can do it, that
we'll see if our tech staff here can
okay
can get it to work. Last year there was some problems.
I told you about Tim when I showed you how to drive the pickup.
Yeah.
Warren Krause is telling stories about his son Charles growing up on the farm. The Buffalo, Minnesota farmer started Krause Holsteins in 1959 with $100 in his pocket. He says for the first 20 years it was rough, but he did have some help. By the time young Charles was old enough to see over the wheel of a tractor, he was glued to his dad, watching, learning, and working. And then the unthinkable happened. When Charles was just a sophomore in high school, Warren had a heart attack. No one could get through the snow to help keep the farm running. So Charles took over, milking and feeding 100 cows by himself for almost a month.
And, you know, you go through something like that, and it's hard enough just to have your dad in the hospital, but then you have the whole responsibility of running a dairy operation. That's something that's either going to chase you away or cement your desire.
I'm proud of him that he's willing to step out and kind of follow in my footsteps.
And the thing that I probably like the most is being able to work for my dad every day. You know, when I was 16, I didn't know if I was going to have him. And here he is, you know, it's been 30 years and he's still here, so that's pretty cool.
So now it's time to start planning for the next generation of the Krause family. And Charles's children are ready to step up.
I really enjoy working with my dad and my grandpa and having this family operation, and I want to see this continue on, so that's why I've made this decision to want to come back here in my future.
It was a generational thing that we went through, my father and my son and I, to plan out what we wanted to do and chart a map for the future.
I'm currently an undergraduate at the University of Minnesota studying animal science and dairy production.
And hopefully that's something he can bring back, is some of the new science that they're teaching at the university.
Some new science is exactly what Andrew was able to contribute when the Krauses built a new freestall barn.
When we decided to build this barn, once the blueprints came in, I looked through them, and as the blueprints evolved and the things that we liked, I would put in more features and stuff. And at the end of this barn, I had a couple features of my own.
Andrew suggested a truss system to increase airflow and LED lighting and thermostat-controlled curtains to improve cow comfort and increase energy efficiency. But by far, the most innovative feature of this barn is its manure handling system. The manure is automatically scraped into holding tanks and pumped to this manure separator, which removes all the liquid and creates a dry bedding for the cows to lay on.
Sustainability is always my mind, and I know that's on the mind of the consumer.
They want to make sure that we're doing the best we can to protect the environment and the land that we live on and raise a family on. It warms my heart to see how both of my children have really taken on leadership roles and how well-spoken they both are about speaking about agriculture and telling the story that we have.
Definitely I want to stay in the dairy industry, whether it's being a promoter for dairy or coming straight back here and helping on the farm. Because I've grown up here and I feel like this is really just where I belong. I'm a fifth generation dairy farmer and I really take great pride in that because it's a really cool thing that not a lot of people get to say.
That's one of the things I take pride in every day is being an American dairy farmer and providing a wholesome and nutritious product for the people of not only the United States, but of the world.
My dad is definitely my role model. I look up to him for almost everything, you know, and I've learned so much from him, and I credit a lot of who I am today because of my dad. He's a pretty tough guy, and he also knows when to have fun, you know, so I really appreciate having two sides of him that I can enjoy, you know, and I enjoy working with him on this on the operation, you know, and I could see myself in the future working side by side with him to help grow this farm.
Someone in my family has been milking cows for the last 100 years in the United States, and it's something to take a great deal of pride in. So that's what I like about being a dairy farmer.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Pat, that was a wonderful video. Those of us approaching the age of retirement, you know, we hope to pass our operations along to the next generation. So that was just wonderful. And I think it also shows too that some of these operations, as they get bigger, they're still family operations, family farms. We have to remember that it's still just a great way to keep families together and expand operations, use all this modern technology and such. It's just an exciting time to be involved in ag, and in this case dairy. So dairy is looking good right now, you know, feed costs down and prices respectable, so it's an optimistic time. So thank you for coming, all of you, and we salute you here at the state capitol. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Pat, I just want to thank you. I'm the newest member of this committee, and I acknowledge that I have a lot to learn. And last summer, I had the opportunity to visit a lot of locales and meet a lot of people. In many ways, my favorite visit was the visit to the Annexed Dairy Farm in Nicollet County. And they were very just gracious hosts. What I saw in that video is basically what I saw in the dairy. And it was really neat. The brothers stuck with me and my brother came. My brother is visiting. It was a very hot day, about 95 degrees that day. And they gave us a two-hour tour. And the two Annexed boys stuck with us that whole time. And the sense of the family operating this the dairy, including, you know, and I also met the grandma who helps with the calves and that sort of thing. The story I like to tell most, though, is... again, remember it's a hot day, and so we're sweating and we're getting hot. But then we've kind of finished up where the cows are calving, and to see how noticeably cool it was in that location, and how those cows were taken well care of, and reminded throughout the tour about how contented cows create a lot of milk and quality product. It just was obvious that this was a high quality operation, and I appreciate what you and others do in this industry in Minnesota. Thank you,
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess to Mr. Luneman, I just have a question. And I know you said you support the 48-hour, you know, not have to pay overtime until after 48 hours. Are there other industries that should also receive that? I'm just thinking, I mean, if it's good for agriculture, and I know that, you know, I farm and, you know, we look at our employees and we pay overtime at 40 hours. I'm just trying to think if there's other industries that should also have that exemption, because we don't typically want to do carve-outs just for a single, but, you know, we want to apply things like that broadly. So help me to know where else we should apply that.
Mr. Luneman.
I don't know that it's my position to judge what other industries should have the exemption, but what I will say that's unique about agriculture is that when there's work that needs to be done, it has to be done, whether it's the spring planning rush or we're busy with seasonal calving, and it, when you get up in the morning, you're not sure how long your day is going to be. And as we grow our farms and bring in additional labor to help us to take care of our animals and our crops, we have to be sensitive as to what the rules are as far as getting the work done and taking care of our livestock and get the crops, because it's all it all has to be done in a timely manner. It can't be shut off. So if I were to answer your question, it would be industry that can't shut off the spigot on Friday or Saturday at noon need to be considered, but that's my personal opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're all reading about the drought in California, and it's particularly hitting dairy hard. Are you all, you must be talking about what that means for Minnesota dairy. Would you share what you're talking about?
Mr. Luneman.
I do watch what goes on in other parts of the country. I get a newsletter every week from the Milk Producers of California. I don't know how I got on that, but I'll take it. It gives me an insight on what's going on in that state particularly. And yes, you're correct in that water is a severe issue for them. What we have in Minnesota is a wonderful resource. We haven't found any oil yet, but we do have water. And I believe that Minnesota being strong with water as a resource gives us an advantage going forward. Obviously, we have to protect our water, make sure that it stays clean for future generations and for future use. But I do believe that we have an asset that can be put to use. And as I look at our dairy industry in Minnesota, bringing cows to Minnesota, adding cows to our state, bring some diversity to our agriculture whereby we can have different crops other than corn and beans, and I raise corn as well, but it provides some diversity that's good for not only our state's economy but also for our environment, and I think that it's good for Minnesota, and the water issue is definitely there. I understand that, but we need to just be diligent here in our state.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, actually, the path I was trying to go down is there anything we are doing to essentially advertise Minnesota or to increase here as there's going to be decreases in dairy production in California. That's just clear. And they can't handle it. So how are we positioning ourselves? I mean, one of the things people have talked to me about are increasing dairy in some of the counties like Todd County, where there are still big barns that are not used. So I'm trying to get a little more specific here.
Mr. Luneman.
The Western dairy industry has started to relocate. California is stable in cow numbers, but many of those dairy farmers in that state are relocating to other states, but they're relocating to states like Texas, South Dakota, Northwest Iowa, and to a lesser degree in some other plain states. What we're seeing is that there's relocation, but it's not necessarily including Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So we as an industry and as a state need to figure out why that is. There's some studies that are going on right now to determine why isn't Minnesota gaining these dairies from other states. At this point, the results in the study are inconclusive, but we need to be vigilant in figuring out, is it our business climate? Is it our resources? I think it's a number of things, but most of all, we need to be inviting as a state to say, hey, this is a good place to be. We have water, we have feed, we have the infrastructure, we have the processing, all of that is right here in Minnesota. And we need to build on that and expand on it. But without the cows, without that basic platform for agriculture, we're just going to stay status quo. So I thank you for your question, and we do need to be inviting in our great state.
Representative Wagenius.
I think it would be helpful for this committee to look at what does that invitation mean? And I don't know what it is, but it does seem we do have the water. We're actually in the long term, for people who are thinking long term, it's going to be cooler here, and that's, I mean, I'm not sure I'd go to Texas or places where it's going to be so hot and water is iffy. But maybe those conversations aren't being, you know, people aren't even having those conversations. I don't know. It'd be it would be something maybe that we can pursue, if that would be okay.
Thank you. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one of the reasons why the dairy industry is leaving California is because the anti-ag legislation that has been passed. And we'd said here a few years ago, you're going to start seeing a mass exodus, whether it's dairy cows or poultry production or whatever the case may be. There's no better place to raise livestock than right here in Minnesota in the Midwest. And we should be embracing that. And, you know, you take a look at what the video showed. Those are excellent producers and the technology there. You take a look at what we've done legislatively, whether it's manure management plans. You take a look at what the university has helped us understand, that manure is not just a something negative. It's actually become a commodity. You apply it at agronomic rates exactly to the crop needs, and you're able to actually sell the manure to area farmers and apply it at agronomic rates, and again, do it in a way that's very environmental safe. And so not only look into it, we need to embrace it. We need to embrace the dairy industry and do whatever we can in order to continue to grow, because once again, this is the best place to do it. And I'll just reiterate what I said initially. California has been passing a lot of legislation that is anti-agriculture, and that's one of the biggest reasons why there's a mass exodus now of the industry.
All right. Any other questions or comments? And thank you, Mr. Luneman, for the presentation, for the tweets, and for coming today. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And we do have a couple more people to talk about dairy, and we've got Mr. Ward in the audience. He's going to come down. Welcome to the committee. If you please just state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm David Ward. I'm Dairy Director for Cooperative Network. We're a trade association that deals with cooperatives, and we're the partners with Minnesota Milk and for Dairy Day at the Capitol. And it's been a good partnership. It's kind of like the partnership that occurs out in the country in Minnesota. Cooperatives need Minnesota milk producers to produce the milk that we turn into, that we add value to and turn into products like cheese, yogurt, and butter. Minnesota dairy producers need cooperatives to purchase that milk. So it's been a very good partnership, and we're glad to partner on Dairy Day at the Capitol. We're the couple concerns that we have, the warehouse tax and its impact on cooperative processors. We're unsure of the impact on what's included, what's not included in the warehouse tax. Is cheese and cold storage included? This kind of iffy. Is it included? Is it not included? Dried whey that's packaged and ready for export, is that going to be taxed? We've even gone so far as some of our dairy cooperative processors are looking at other states to store their products. So I appreciate the mood that the House has had in looking at these taxes, and hopefully that you would repeal this warehouse tax so we can get on and better plan our business plans in the future. Last year, the legislature passed us and commissioned the Minnesota Department of Revenue to do a study on the equipment used in business production. And included in that study was the equipment used in dairy processing. We were very fortunate to be able to work with the Department of Revenue in identifying some dairy processors that they could visit to learn more about the ins and outs of dairy processing. They came up with three scenarios, and we're recommending the scenario one of their recommendations. This will need a legislative approval, and so we're going to continue to be engaged on this process to make sure that Minnesota dairy cooperative processors, those that make the cheese and the butter and the yogurt, do not pay more than their fair share in property taxes. So we'll look forward to working with you and as that language from the Department of Revenue goes through the legislative process. A couple things, some of the questions that were asked of Mr. Luneman. One of the things on the overtime pay issue is, I think when it's important to note, you don't want Minnesota to be an island. When other states surrounding Minnesota have different overtime pay rules, it would be put Minnesota agriculture at a competitive disadvantage if they have different overtime pay rules than the states surrounding us. California was mentioned. Part of the problem that California has in their dairy industry is it's based on, they pretty much buy all their feed, ship it in, and process the milk and ship it out. And it's based on a model where cheap feed prices and cheap diesel fuel prices, that was good maybe 10 years ago. Those things have changed now. Another issue, and to make Minnesota a very attractive state, I think we need to have a better permitting plan, not so much of a patchwork of permitting plan, but maybe more of a statewide standards for permitting dairy operations in the state. So when you look at to come to Minnesota, you pretty much know what you have to deal with to get your operation up and running, as opposed to finding the spot, buying the land, deciding to build the operation, and then, oh, by the way, you've got to go through cross a lot of T's and dot a lot of I's to get a permit to operate your operation. So that's a permitting is another part of the issue to make sure it's clear, consistent, and predictable. So with that, I'm very happy to try to answer any questions, but thank you for hosting us, and we look forward to visiting with you during the rest of Dairy Day.
Thank you, Mr. Ward. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. We have Mr. Funk.
Mr. Funk is delayed by weather, so he will not be here.
So. Okay, all right, so then we have anyone else from for the dairy to talk? Otherwise, very good. Well, thank you so much again for the tweets, for coming, for doing what you do every single day. We appreciate it. It's important for all of us. So now we have Representative Lesh. We have House File 84. And we have a number of testifiers for this bill. And we certainly have all received a number of emails regarding this bill. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, that you haven't received enough information on this bill, so I'm here to give you more. members, I'm sorry. I guess
actually,
we need to move it.
Right, we'll move the bill. House File 84, and I believe you have an amendment.
That's correct. Madam Chair, and did you want to you want me to explain the amendment ahead of time, or do you want to pass it and then explain it?
I think we can pass it.
Okay.
And then I can explain it. So I'll move House File 84, and all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And then any opposed? Okay, and then we have the amendment. So I'm going to do, it's the A14 amendment, so all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. All right. The motion prevails. We have the amended bill in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we've had a lot of meetings on this bill. The amendment was the result of over 25 changes based on compromises that were arrived at by the groups. One removed the registration of hobby breeders by the Board of Animal Health, which then removed definitions for hobby breeder, broker, and pet dealer. Another, it increased the age that puppies and kittens are considered adults from 28 weeks to 28 weeks from 24 weeks. It removed unannounced annual inspections, so it's up to the board whether to notify the breeder in advance. It made the board the sole reporting agency for complaints against breeders and removing who the board shall work with on those complaints. And then there were a variety of changes that addressed local ordinances, penalties, housing, exercising of animals, posting of license holders in good standing on the BAH website, information required on the initial application, and the process to submit information by mail, by electronic means or others. It also added a biosecurity section to require officials entering a breeding facility to comply with certain health and safety practices. added a section requiring breeders to maintain health records on each animal for 2 years. It added a section requiring breeders to work with a Minnesota licensed veterinary and BA Association and BAH to create veterinary protocol at the facilities. Added a section on animal premises data, which will keep all breeder information classified as private or non-public. And this was this caused some heartburn among some folks, especially considering I chair the committee that has jurisdiction over data practices, and we generally keep information public in Minnesota so that the government's not keeping secret data on you. However, there were concerns among the parties that this would result in bad consequences from some folks that were trying to be good actors and were subjected to, their information was subjected to public use. So we made that compromise and changed it. We got acquiescence from Representative Holberg as well, for whom this is an important issue. We also added a section to develop a recognition program for commercial breeder excellence. So that is just some of the more recent compromises and arrangements that we've made on this bill. There are, of course, many others that have been made over the course of the seven-year lifespan of this bill. This included input from large breeders, small breeders, veterinarians, agricultural interests, the Board of Animal Health, animal welfare, advocates, and citizens. Minnesota is among the top producers of puppies in the United States, with some of the largest dog breeding kennels in the nation, housing 300, 600, or 1,000 or more. The kittens are also mass-produced in Minnesota. I'm not going to go into the circumstances that gave rise to people feeling the need for this bill. As many of you who are have been around here for a little while, you recognize that when we seek to regulate any particular business or industry based upon a certain need, the folks who come up and testify are the ones who are generally the good actors. They're the ones who have been doing the right thing, and they really don't want their hands tied when they've been doing the right thing. They want to keep doing what they're doing, and they feel government breathing down their neck and say, wait a second, why are you punishing me for doing the right thing? You don't hear from the folks who are the reasons why this bill is in front of you. The only time you hear from those people is when it makes it into the newspaper or there's a police report about a horrendous situation that we don't want to tell our kids about or see pictures of. So that's why we're here today, is because of that. And it's my firm contention that based upon the compromises that were reached in this bill, that after several years, even folks who were nervous about or suspicious of it will be happy with it and recognize that it affords them the opportunity to be seen as the good actors that they are, and that there is not other onerous conditions placed on them to operate their business and live their life. So I would note that the original start of this was because Minnesota's current regime of animal cruelty law is only complaint-based. You have to see something happening and you report it to the local authorities and it's investigated. That has given rise to all kinds of problems, including, number one, massive problems of cruelty that have gone unnoticed. Number two, it's also given rise to individuals who make entrance upon family farms or other places of business just to catch someone red-handed. If this law were enacted, we would obviate that kind of situation because we have individuals who run a business who can expect a certain type of standard that they're adhering to, and they're not subject to haphazard or mercurial positions or opinions by other types of authorities. The local ordinances that Minnesota has, there are, of course, some local ordinances that are in place throughout Minnesota, but also they are complaint-based. So without going on too long, because you're going to hear from a lot of people on this, Madam Chair, I would say that that's what I'll leave my testimony to at this point, and I know you have other testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. And we first have a question, Representative Quisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm very curious, just for some clarifying remarks from the testifier, from Representative Lesh. You had mentioned there's good and bad players, and I absolutely agree. I mean, we only get to see what's in front of us. A number of emails have come through on this for me, and one of them I want to read verbatim was, "There's morally corrupt individuals operating behind closed doors in dark barns, torturing animals where no one sees their plight or hears their cries." My question to you is, does this same sentiment exist for the dairy industry? We saw an amazing video here, very emotionally charged, and if we were to have that same type of video from some of the very good breeders that I know that are doing kennels, that are doing commercial operations, would our sentiments change here? I mean, we as an ag policy have to look at this as an agriculture base. And my question is, if we were to take this exact sentiment against our dairy farmers, what would the outcomes be here? What would the legislation be? If we were to take these regulations and apply them there, are they the same? I it may be rhetorical, and I'm trying to understand the sentiment and the emotion behind this and apply it broadly to all the industries.
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Representative Crescia, I think your concern was commonly shared among folks. Is this bill a slippery slope? Are we looking to bootstrap other livestock or other animals onto what currently exists as only dogs and cats? And the answer is no. That may be a valid debate at some point. It's not the debate for this bill, and it's not a debate that I intend to get engaged in. I would note, Madam Chair, that after 7 years, I hope this will be my last animal bill, and I guarantee you, it's not going to be. I'm not going to be doing anything on the dairy industry. But if that were to happen, Representative Crescia, I don't think it would happen anytime soon, and I don't think it would happen on this bill.
Representative Crescia.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I appreciate that. But there's a lot of I thinks and a lot of I believes in there, and I'm not sure there's enough assurance there. And I guess as we have testifiers from many of the agriculture firms and industries that come down, I would ask those to consider the same possibility. If these types of regulations were coming to your industries, where would your support stand? So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Crescia. And Representative Lesh, I believe, has another committee, another vote, another bill.
I have to go vote, Madam Chair. I'll be right back. So if there are other questions for me, I'll be back for those.
Okay.
But maybe you could go.
Very good. We'll continue then with having testifiers. So we've got Tom Peterson, who will testify, and then after Tom Peterson, Dr. John Bailey. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to go first today. My name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we are here today to testify in support of House File 84 and as amended, and appreciate you having this hearing and the efforts of Representative Lesh. As he said, there's been a lot of meetings on this. I think 7 years, if that's what it is, it's amazing how time flies. We have been a part of the process, I wanted you to know, on this bill. An interesting question from Representative Crescia, because my involvement on this bill came from resolutions from your area on different actors and how things were. And so we've thought about that a lot. You know, is this a slippery slope into animal agriculture? Is this different? And, you know, looking at that, we really felt that the intentions and the specificity to this bill is to pet breeders. We have represented a lot of different smaller hobby breeders. They were satisfied with this bill when I looked at it, and we were satisfied with people who had concerns about unregulated breeders who looked at this bill. We believe this, as I said, it's specific to pet breeders and has limited or no impact at this time on agriculture. And we have some concerns about the bill, mostly have been addressed. I just mentioned one piece that I've talked to Representative Lesh about and others about. It's on 4.5 on, I think, page 4. And I think there's others that could talk to that. And I think they're going to work to address that. But those chapters would, as I understand it, may disqualify you for a pretty minor what could be perceived as a minor offense, and something that I think we would, you know, continue to look at as the bill moves forward to, I think, Chair Wagenius's committee, if that's where it goes. Other than that, those are my comments, and I urge your support. So, thank you.
Right. Any questions for Mr. Peterson, Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Madam Chair and members. Oh, Representative Lesh is back. We did talk about that, Mr. Peterson, in the hall. Myself and Representative Lesh shook hands and agreed that we would work on that between the next stop. Correct, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, that is correct. There are concerns that I think some are legitimate, and I'm willing to work on between here and Ag Finance.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Dr. Bailey.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Dr. John Bailey. I've just completed my term as the president of the Minnesota Veterinary Medicine Association, and I'm now serving as the immediate past president and board member for the association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today in support of the A14 amendment. As I'm sure most of you know, this issue has been in the legislative arena for a number of years, and hopefully we're at a point that we can finally move this important issue forward to a positive resolution. We would like to thank Representative Lesh for his leadership in this issue and for his willingness to assemble a group of key stakeholders in order to discuss our differences and to eventually reach a compromise that is represented in the A14 amendment. Last session, the MVMA put forth legislation, HF 1005, with the chief author, Representative Faust, and co-authored by some of you sitting here today, that outlined the MVMA's position on this issue. The key provisions of this bill include completion of a veterinary health certificate for a commercial dog and cat breeder before an animal is sold, establishment of written veterinary protocols at commercial dog and cat breeding facilities that contain disease control and prevention, euthanasia, and veterinary care of animals at each facility. Enhanced record-keeping requirements of commercial dog and cat breeders, and the Board of Animal Health being the lead entity for inspection, investigation, and possible enforcement action of commercial dog and cat breeding facilities. We would like to thank Representative Faust for authoring the MVMA bill, as we believe this bill's introduction was an important step to getting us to the point we are today. Late last session, at the request of several legislators and at the invitation of Representative Lesh, MVMA participated in several meetings with the Board of Animal Health, the Pet Breeders Association, the Animal Humane Society, Animal Folks, and the bill authors together helped forge the provisions contained in the A14 amendment, including merging the main provisions of the MVMA bill, HF 1005, into this amended version. We believe our provisions are important to ensure the animals at these commercial facilities are provided quality care and conditions. The MVMA also strongly believes that the full funding request of the Board of Animal Health is crucial to this legislation's success. We would ask for your support of the A14 amendment. MVMA understands that this amendment may not be perfect, but we are confident that it will go a long way in addressing many of the problems associated with the breeder facilities in this state. Thank you, Madam Chair, and all committee members. And I can now stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question, Representative Lesh, and good job getting people together and finally coming up with a compromise piece of legislation here. Question, Board of Animal Health doing the inspections, why not Department of Ag? They usually do inspections and such around the state. Why that that selection?
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, that's a good question. I think it's probably better left to the Board of Animal Health.
We can have Dr. Hartman come down to answer that question. So welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the state veterinarian, and it's good to be back. Good to see you all. I I tell people this is one of my favorite parts of my job, so thank you for the opportunity. Why the Board of Animal Health? The Board of Animal Health has a cadre of veterinarians scattered throughout the state and animal health technicians, and I think we're, if there's an agency within state government that would best be suited to implement this program, it would be the Board of Animal Health.
All right, and Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Dr. Hartman. Will this in any way take away from our focus on all the important things that you do in addition to this, you know, emerging diseases, et cetera? Are we equipped and able to take this on in the Board of Animal Health?
Dr. Hartman.
Madam Chair and Representative Hamilton, it's a good, very good question. I think I would start out by saying it will be a diversion for the board, or a a change for the Board of Animal Health. We've been mostly involved in livestock and livestock disease eradication and control programs. So this is a bit of a new venture for us. The important thing, I think, to us is that the funding is adequate so that we aren't taking resources from other programs that we have at the board to fund this. And in the A14 amendment, the funding is adequate to administer the program as our best estimate. We do not know how many dog and cat breeders are out there and how much work this is going to be. We've done the best we can to gather information to best answer that question and estimate it, but it is a bit of a guess as well.
Thank you, Dr. Hartman. Okay. All right. Thank you for coming down. Next, we have Belinda Donnelly and Quinn Cheney. Welcome to the committee. If you just state your name for the record, please.
Belinda Donnelly.
And then you can begin your testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Belinda Donnelly, and I live in Park Rapids, Minnesota. I've been a breeder for 11 years. It's something that I chose to do. And I'm representing Minnesota Pet Breeders here today. It's a club that is statewide. We represent about probably 100 kennels, and we have we started the club in 2003 to educate breeders to do a better job. We have large facilities that are USDA regulated, and we have small hobby breeders. We've invited anybody that has anything to do with the animal industry to come and get educated. We hold several educational situations throughout the state during the year. We do a seminar once a year where breeders can come and get about probably 14 to 16 hours of education from top veterinarians across the nation. And I personally try to do at least 40 hours of education for my own facility so that I know what disease control is current, animal husbandry, proper care. And I'm here to let you know that we're trying to make our industry a reputable industry. And last year, I was elected to be president of Minnesota Pet Breeders, and we do get involved with AKC functions, we do dog shows, we do eye certifications. We try to do things that are going to enhance the lives of our dogs. Last year, Minnesota Pet Breeders testified several times on opposition to HF 84, and the authors had requested that we participate and find common ground. And Minnesota Pet Breeders, with our lobbyist, Quinn Cheney, have really tried to meet on that common ground. We think that we've made quite a bit of progress, and, you know, there are some provisions still that we don't like about the bill. But we can live with them. And I would just like to hand any questions that you might have of me over to Quinn.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Donnelly, Ms. Cheney.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Quinn Cheney, and I represent the Minnesota Pet Breeders Association. And I do just want to thank the committee members and the chair and Representative Lesh for working so well with us over the past several months. We have made a lot of progress on the bill. As Belinda stated, there are things, as in any bill, there are things we are much happier with. There are still some things that we don't love, but we can live with. I think the biggest issue that we still have with it was actually already identified by previous testifiers, just with respect to the terms of how the Board of Animal Health can actually issue that license and when they have to deny it, and some issues with respect to whether you've been whether you've simply violated some previous statutes of law, Chapter 343 and 346, and whether you've been convicted. And I think, as Representative Hamilton and Representative Lesh have agreed, I'm very happy that we're still going to be working on those sections. I guess just one other thing to say is that I think our organization still finds that it's a little bit duplicative, and in that the USDA over the summer has implemented new rules that will now license most of the breeders in Minnesota that haven't been licensed in the past. And I know there's still some question as to how those will all be implemented, but I hope that we can continue working with the Board of Animal Health on making sure that that we are regulating in Minnesota and regulating, or that we are not duplicating the efforts that the USDA is already doing. I do also want to just highlight one really good thing about the bill, too, not to just be negative. Representative Lesh was kind enough, and the Board of Animal Health worked with us to include a section at the end of the bill, which the Board of Animal Health will work to recognize breeders that go above and beyond the regulations and demonstrate excellence in breeding. And so we're really excited that not only not only is that this regulation going to be there, we're not excited about that as much, but we are excited about this new opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Cheney, yes. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, I suppose you're about to have one, right? Oh. So showed you how to drive your pickup?
Yeah.
Warren Krause is telling stories. Welcome to the house.
All right. Okay. That one.
Having said that.
Yes. Representative Anderson.
I did have a question following that comment, Representative Lesh, on this idea of dual inspections. If a facility happens to be inspected federally, would the state come in right behind and do the same thing again, or is there an ability to work together and not inspect places, time and time again, both federally and by the state?
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that's not our intention. I'm a Democrat, right? So I'm more than happy for the federal government to come in and do our job for us. But there are many people on this committee that aren't necessarily as satisfied with that, and they'd rather have the state do it, provided we are accomplishing what we intend to in the bill. Because of all the gray area about the federal regulations at this point, I'm very satisfied the compromise we've reached here is a good solution for the state of Minnesota to take care of its own. If at such time that's obviated because the feds are doing it and paying for it, obviously members of this committee have much less control over how that goes. However, if that's the case, it's not our intent to be duplicative.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you. Oh, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Donnelly, you talked about wanting to elevate the reputation and stuff like that, and there's a similar issue with agriculture, the livestock industry, where because of whether it's biosecurity reasons or whatever, it appears to the general public that there's something to hide, even though there isn't. And we've worked with Temple Grandin on a number of things, from Colorado State University, an animal care expert, right, animal behavioral expert. And like she's talked about, is that we need glass walls. videos like we just saw, allowing people to see what really happens and takes place. And I think the perception will change over time if we do that. But like I said, because of, you know, biosecurity reasons, or because of the fact that we've focused on providing the consumer with a safe, wholesome, great-tasting product at an affordable price, and not so much on the public awareness or, you know, education process, that's where we all get painted with the same ugly brush. You know, you see these pictures, this is what we need to eliminate. No question about it. Every single one of us will say that. This is what we need to eliminate. But you're not this type of breeder. I can see that, right? Right. You're not this type of breeder. And so I want to thank you for coming up here today, and it takes a lot of courage to testify and share your story, but it's essential. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And next we have Michelle Leba and Reese Fredrickson. After that, it will be Keith Streff and Julie Gertis. So as you come before us, and please have a seat and state your name for the record.
Michelle Leba.
Thank you. All right. You can go ahead.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Michelle Leba, and I am here today to testify in support of House File 84 as a consumer. My husband and I purchased two puppies, a beagle and a rat terrier, at a pet store in Ramsey, Minnesota. Having just been through the heartbreaking task of putting our 11-year-old dog to sleep who had lymphoma, we were delighted to have two new additions to our household. We named the beagle Molly Joe and the rat terrier Fritz Patrick. We brought them to the veterinarian, our veterinarian, the next day for a checkup and to show off our new family members. Our happiness soon became concern and sadness when Molly was diagnosed with an ear infection, coccidia, and kennel cough. Fritz also had coccidia and kennel cough. Coccidia is a parasitic infection that caused them both to have diarrhea for weeks and weeks, which, as you can imagine, was difficult to deal with when trying to house train two puppies. Kennel cough is a respiratory infection which caused them to be very tired and lethargic. After several rounds of antibiotics and fecal testing, our puppies were finally rid of the coccidia and kennel cough, and they could start playing and feeling good like normal puppies should. Approximately 6 months after we purchased the puppies, Fritz began having seizures. It was absolutely horrifying. I can't describe the pain and fear of watching my puppy's whole body go into convulsions, watching foam come out of his mouth, and then sitting there for up to 30 minutes while he lay there unable to walk. He had six seizures over 2 months. He underwent extensive testing at our local vet, who referred us to a specialist at the University of Minnesota. He was eventually diagnosed with epilepsy. Fritz is on seizure medication for the rest of his life. Fortunately, we had the resources to deal with the economic costs of Molly and Fritz's medical conditions, which to date have totaled over $5,000. Many other consumers would have had to resort to economic euthanasia, putting the dog to sleep or giving it back to the breeder. In addition to the financial impact, the ordeal was very emotionally painful. As I began to research this, I couldn't believe that Minnesota breeders are not licensed or ever inspected by a state agency. Due to this lack of oversight, many consumers like myself have purchased unhealthy puppies. Licensing and inspections are the legal means to hold businesses accountable. This way, the breeders will be inspected to assure the animals are properly cared for while in their possession, so that when we as consumers purchase them, they will be healthy. I believe that our pets deserve this protection, as do consumers such as myself. Thank you for your time and consideration. I urge your support of this very important bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Reese?
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Reese Fredrickson. I'm with the Kanawha County Attorney's Office, and I'm here to support House File 84. I am one of two criminal prosecutors for a rural county about 90 miles north of the Twin Cities. As a law enforcement official, I am interested in ensuring that crimes are deterred. I am also interested in ensuring that crimes are discovered and prosecuted effectively and efficiently. As a prosecutor, I have prosecuted a number of animal cruelty cases. The perpetrators of some of these cases would fall within House File 84 as commercial breeders. The current system is complaint-based and does not work. Small counties such as mine do not regulate breeders. The only time we hear of cases is via complaint, and when there is a complaint, either law enforcement will investigate or the sole humane agent assigned to the northern half of Minnesota will investigate. Typically, law enforcement does not have the training to deal with animal breeder complaints, so they will ask humane agents to look into it. We often do not get a complaint until a breeder is out of control, and at that point, the law authorizes seizure of those animals. However, the costs associated with seizure of animals puts a large dent in a small county's budget. Costs for large operations can easily run from $10,000 to $100,000, which comes out of the general fund or law enforcement's budget. Because of this cost, unethical breeders are often ignored or given leeway. I've heard of many unethical breeding practices going on behind the walls of facilities throughout Minnesota. However, because of cost concerns, lack of regulation, and the inability of law enforcement to gain access to these facilities, perpetrators of animal cruelty crimes are not exposed or brought to justice. The result is delayed suffering, and perpetrators are not held accountable for their crimes. I support House File 84 because it provides a means of regulating unethical breeders before the problems get out of control, because it is respectful of ethical breeders, and because it defines a reasonable standard of care. The bottom line is that unregulated commercial breeders are a problem here in Minnesota. Other states such as Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, Kansas, Louisiana, and Virginia that recognize these problems and lack of oversight from the federal government. Please consider passing this bill. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Fredrickson. Seeing no questions, we appreciate your testimony. We've got Keith Streff and Julie Gerdes. Welcome to the testimony table. If you would please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Keith Streff, and I'm the Senior Humane Agent for the Animal Humane Society based in Golden Valley. Like others that have testified before me, I've also been very involved with this bill for the last 7 years, and being having been born on a dairy farm in Western Stearns County, I always look forward to the Ag Committee and testifying in front of it. That always makes for an interesting Easter break when I go back to my family with and friends and relatives that are still heavily engaged in the farming activity, and meet that barrage of questions after I've testified in this bill. But nevertheless, I've been employed with the Animal Humane Society since 1987, and of course my background is a long line of farming and animal biology, criminal justice, and law enforcement. I'm also a licensed police officer. I work on a part-time basis for an agency in southwestern Minnesota, and have worked in a variety of capacities with animal-related issues and law enforcement in general. The Animal Humane Society is the largest animal humane welfare organization in the Upper Midwest. We have five shelters in five different counties that serves, provides programs and services to people and their pets across the entire state of Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in strong support of House File 84, and would hope that you're interested and questions would prompt a strong debate in getting a bill that we need passed today. As a humane agent, one of my responsibilities is to respond to citizen complaints regarding situations and animals that are subject to situations and conditions alleged to be in violation of the Animal Welfare Chapter. I'm sure you've all heard and you've read and seen some of the cases that have been publicized in the past on one of these cases breaks. Many of these cases, I was the lead investigator on them. These cases involve dozens, sometimes hundreds of animals. Some animals are stacked in cages, some run loose, some left to breed indiscriminately. Some are sick, some injured, some diseased, some dying, and some dead. They're subject to improper isolation. They have improper feed, water, sanitation, ventilation, treatment resulting in untreated sores, rotting teeth, blindness, maggot-infested coats, overgrown nails, psychotic behavior. The list goes on. I've witnessed dogs fed to roadkill. I've seen amateur practice C-sections and whatever else is necessary to always ensure that there are puppies available for sale. And that's what drives this market. It's a money-driven market, and it's at the expense of the animal. And it's at the expense of the animal simply because it's currently an unregulated industry. Some of the environments require hazmat suits. They require breathing apparatuses, simply due to the staggering amount of excrement and odor, potential pathogens, et cetera. And I think you've seen some of those cases highlighted on news in recent years. Minnesota currently does not have any language in state law that specifically regulates commercial dog and cat breeding facilities. There are no required inspections. There's no current licensing program. House File 84 provides regulation that's preventative, inspecting and then addressing problem situations in breeding facilities before they escalate to the point where animals need to be seized. There are numerous other states that have language in place. Some among them are Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Iowa. Minnesota law only allows me and other law enforcement personnel to respond after a complaint is filed. And it's been in my professional experience that it's typically too late. House File 84 will allow the Board of Animal Health to identify, to correct, and the key word here is to prevent a catastrophic environment before it develops. County-issued conditional use permits, interim use permits, they're not consistent today. Some permits may or may not require non-complaint-based inspections. Many of the rural counties and townships have no animal control ordinances at all. Uniform statewide regulation will save local municipalities and law enforcement money in the long term. We can take, for example, the costs associated with having to seize animals from a breeding facility or wherever there's a valid complaint filed. Again, keep in mind that the only way I or any other law enforcement can hear about cruelty is after a problem is observed and if someone contacts authorities about it. Current law specifically states that expenses related to cruelty cases shall be paid by the county. Not if, could, would, might, but shall. So those costs are burdened by the county today. This incentivizes the county to overlook the problem and or push it over to the local humane societies. These costs are becoming too frequent and too costly, and the Animal Humane Society cannot continue to burden those costs. The number of animals involved is directly commensurate with the cost of the intervention. So imagine a breeder, dozens or hundreds of animals in a facility. The breeder's inspected and found to have problems, which would be issued correction orders. Through this practice, the breeder is given an opportunity to meet the minimum standards required by existing animal welfare statutes. And that's what we're currently working under today. If the breeder is unwilling or unable to comply, the Board of Animal Health will have the right and the authority to take enforcement action. And that's an important issue. There are several due process provisions in the bill that's in front of you today so that the seizing of the animals is not the first step, which is what we're working with today. Contrary, today when I show up for in a situation or find conditions that are so catastrophic, there's often no alternative because I'm the last guy in the scene. The intent of our bill is to regulate the breeding of dogs and cats to the extent that ensures genetically sound and healthy animals. Not only the adults used for breeding purposes, but the puppies and the kittens they produce and are subsequently sold to the public at large. I urge your support for House File 84, and I'll be around the remaining of the debate to answer any questions you might have. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. We have Julie Gerdes, Douglas Ohlendorf, Elaine Hansen, Valerie Leboux, and then we'll have any people from the public who might be interested. So we've got Julie Gerdes next. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Julie Gerdes. Thank you, committee members, for hearing my testimony today. I produce fabulous home-raised puppies for Minnesota families to choose to purchase or not to purchase. My testimony today. I produce fabulous home-raised puppies for Minnesota families to choose to purchase or not to purchase. I've been raising pets for 25 years. My first litter was born 25 years ago. In the first 15 years that I started this, I was a part-time hobby breeder. And after gaining a lot of experience and maintaining my passion, I was able to take the love of raising pets and turn it into a full-time profession 10 years ago. Excuse me. I live in the country. I live on a five-acre property. Where I live, it's against the law to own any more than five dogs on 5 acres without government permission. In order to get permission to own more than five dogs, and this has nothing to do with breeding. It would be whether I just wanted to have five companion animals. You have to go through a kennel license application, and then also to have a commercial kennel, you have to have a conditional use permit application. I applied for those permits. Public hearings were held. I went through planning and zoning meetings and went to a public meeting with the city council. And I was denied my permit to be able to raise or own more than five dogs. What I had to do in order to run my business was I had to file a lawsuit against my city at the state court appellate system to get my town to approve me. It's not easy to become a dog breeder these days. 80 to 85% of the counties and cities covered in the state of Minnesota already have limit laws on how many pets you can own. It doesn't have to do about breeding. It just is about simple pet ownership. Most places won't let you own any more than 3 to 5 dogs, period. I'm not opposed to a state licensure program, but I am opposed to a lot of what is written in HF 84. And I'm opposed to a lot of things that have not been, facts that have not been stated, and I'm opposed to a lot of things that have been embellished, and I am opposed to a lot of things that, statements like Minnesota is one of the top producers of puppies in the nation. We aren't even close. In 2013, there was 36 USDA licensed breeders in Minnesota. Missouri had over 600. Iowa had over 248. We don't come even close to that. So there's a lot of facts that are out there. They're trying to get people to think that this is a huge widespread problem, that there's huge breeders out there that aren't being looked at. And that really just isn't the case. I am for inspections of anybody who is not licensed. I believe that an inspection would be important. I am inspected annually to maintain my licensing. Excuse me. I see claims that talk about that there is an pet overpopulation problem, or that this bill would address consumer fraud, or that this bill would reduce or eliminate puppies and kitties from becoming ill, like the testifier previous to us. But this bill, there's nothing in this bill that would prevent a young animal from becoming sick with a disease or a virus. It doesn't improve any genetics. So asking for this bill based on those basis is not factual. I'm asking you to vote no today and not pass this bill through as it is written. I would like to see a task force be put in place so that the real truth of the matter can be fully inspected and not slanted by any particular special interest groups. This bill is being pushed by a lot of people who want to see an end to all breeding. To help them put an end to breeding animals, they need to begin by restricting, reducing, and stifling the industry. There's been a 60% reduction in dog breeding in the state of Minnesota over the last 6 years. It's a shrinking industry, just like any other agricultural industry is. And there are several vegan animal rights extremist groups that are behind this bill. So when people ask about, is this a slippery slope to other forms of agriculture, yes, it is. The same groups that are after dairy farmers are after dog breeders. But some of my specific problems with the bill is I believe that the bill should, some of the things that are written in the bill should pertain to all sellers of dogs and cats and puppies and kittens. Specifically, there is a line that reads a requirement for the animals to be 8 weeks minimum age. If that's really something that's important, then I believe that should be included in Minnesota Statutes 325 so that all breeders and sellers of puppies and kitties don't sell a puppy or kitty before 8 weeks. So I think some of the things that are included in this bill could be covered in Statute 325, which is existing. Some other things that are included in the bill are requiring microchipping and requiring a 30-day certificate of veterinary inspection. Those provisions are important enough to be protecting some puppies and kitties. It should be important enough to protect all puppies and kitties in the state. I'm very opposed to the line that talks about having to give your pets affection. Government shouldn't be making it a crime if you don't hug or pet your dog, your horse, your cow, or your spouse 2 times a day. I'm sorry, I can't see that. I would like to see the brucellosis testing requirements removed. It talks about if a breeder sells a dog that's over 7 months of age, it needs to be brucellosis tested or spayed and neutered. However, spaying and neutering doesn't eliminate brucellosis. Brucellosis is spread in the urine. That part of the bill is confusing to me. I don't see why it's needed. And again, if it is needed, then it should apply to everyone who has a seven-month-old dog that's not spayed or neutered to be sold, not just of the dog breeders who own 10 or more breeding dogs in their facilities. I'm also opposed to the section of the bill that talks about restricting hiring of people who have previously been convicted of a crime. A judge will mandate what employment restrictions someone should have during their sentencing. If a person has completed their sentencing and their probation, they should not have to be further punished by this law, and a business owner should not have to be restricted on who they can hire. I'd like to see that taken out.
We do need to move along. We have a couple more test fires.
I'm done.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I welcome any of your questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Quisha.
And thank you for your testimony, and Chair Poppy. And I'm wondering if the author of the bill has looked at that 5.33 in that the daily enrichment clause and what his thoughts are on that. That seems a little bit overbearing.
Well,
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair and Representative Kresha, I don't think it is. When you look at the standards that we've established, these are accepted standards in the industry. In fact, the standards, when they started out, despite the author's or the testifier's contention that it's vegan groups that are pushing this bill. By the way, I'm a big fan of red meat. The rarer, the better. So I can assure the committee that I'm not sure which groups were being talked about. But the groups that have participated have all established, from those folks that were resistant to the bill in earlier versions, and those who had proposed the initial measures, have reached this compromise based on what are basic accepted industry standards. Now, if you don't want any standards at all, you can characterize them as onerous, but if you're a business owner in the field, and I am not, this is just based upon the broad spectrum coalition we brought together, that these are acceptable. And in fact, from the reasonable individuals that have come forward to oppose this bill, they have not opposed that section cited by the testifier.
Representative Grisha.
Thank you, Chair Poppy. And just to follow up, how do you enforce that?
Representative Lesh.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kresha, remember that all of these are based on, so if you oppose, say, for example, having a problem with an inspector on this bill, you do not lose your rights in state court on this. Your rights are not lost. Therefore, it comes down to a reasonable jury of your peers to decide whether or not you're being unreasonable. And that's in the jurisdiction of that's among the people in the jurisdiction where you're located. So if your neighbors think you're being unreasonable in that, that's fundamentally what the standard is. When you get all the way to the end of it, that's how it's enforced.
Representative Quisha.
And I'm wondering, Chair Poppy, if I could ask the enforcement agency to come up for just a quick question on this.
Welcome back, Mr. Streff.
I very much appreciated your testimony. I thought you brought a lot of good light. On this provision here, how do you enforce this? How do you write this up as as a violation or a correction?
Madam Chair, Representative Kresha, I don't think it's an enforceable issue right at the point of reporting. However, having been in this business long enough to see dogs come out of a facility that can't stand up, are spinning around in circles, they're psychotic, they're acting like they've never seen a human, they've never had anything not over their head. You bring them out in an open environment and they just roll around on the ground and refuse to move. These are all pretty strong exhibitions by a dog that's symptomatic to one that's symptomatic to conditions that they've never seen humans or had any touch or contact or anything. They're just in a black cage to be bred and sold.
Representative Quisha.
And last follow-up, thank you for that. And you know, please don't misconstrue, I have hunting dogs, we love our dogs, and I get what we're trying here, but our job is to put good policy together, good statewide policy. This, to me, doesn't sound enforceable. It is, in your own words, it sounds like it's not something you could do immediately. It just doesn't seem like it belongs here when there's other ways that we can address this problem. I'm assuming that when you arrive, you have some complaints and there's tangible things, there's a checklist you're going to go down to try to address the problems or correct them. And in the words of our author, the only way these things are reported by neighbors and people looking over each other's fences, that seems to be a pretty interesting situation that we're setting up on how we're dealing with this. So those are just my thoughts on it. This just seems very onerous.
Thank you, Representative. We've got three more people on the testifying list, and we have 5 minutes to go, and we have public who may also want to testify. So Douglas Ohlendorf, Elaine Hansen, Valerie LeBeau, and if there's anyone from the public, but we do intend to conclude. We've got 5 minutes, so Mr. Ohlendorf.
Yes, my name is Douglas Ohlendorf. I'm a hobby breeder. I am concerned with some of the definitions that are there. As a hobby breeder of champion dogs, there are oftentimes we will send males for stud services, and if they're males, may father dogs in other states or other places, the number of intact males has no bearing on the number of puppies that are being produced. What you should be counting is females and not male intact male dogs, but intact females. And as for females, a lot of dogs are co-owned. We own about 6 dogs that are currently out of state. And do those pup litters that are produced by there count against our count? They should be dogs that are, you mentioned the word possession as custody. That needs to be strengthened to say that dogs must be in residence. So my objections to this bill is in the wording that it should be focused on female dogs, and they should be in residence in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony. Elaine Hansen.
Good morning, Chair Poppy and
good morning,
members.
Welcome to the committee.
I am Elaine Hansen. I'm currently the president of the Minnesota Council of Dog Clubs, and I'm a member of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance. I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk with you. Unfortunately, most of the time is gone. I'm going to condense my remarks to just a couple of points. My major concern with this bill, other than its intrusiveness, is the duplication of effort. There is a new rule from the USDA that requires licensing of every person who owns more than 4 intact females of any and all pet species combined, and who sells one pet by shipping it to a buyer. That's going to include virtually everyone that would be licensed under this bill. It's an enormous duplication of effort, and I don't believe that it's a good investment for Minnesota to do that. Another concern that I have is that there's no basis for claiming that there are 475 breeders, as the fiscal note admits as an estimate, who need to be regulated in Minnesota. I cannot imagine where 475 huge breeders of this scale can be hiding in. That's 5 per county. It's just unimaginable to me. For those reasons primarily, I urge that you not approve this bill, and I will let the last speaker have a few moments with you. Sorry I couldn't say more.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Valerie LeBeau. Okay, and the page can hand out some stuff. If you just hand it there. Yep, if you want to sit at the table, and he can get that for you. And then if there's anyone from the public, we would have 30 seconds perhaps. Sorry. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, for members of the committee, for hearing me today. My name is Valerie LeBeau. I'm a serious hobby breeder of golden retrievers. My dogs are performance dogs who compete in agility. I donate dogs to service and community organizations. I have about 18 dogs, and I have about 7 to 12 litters a year. I'm inspected by AKC, ACA, my township, and my county. Unfortunately, the pet industry, which is a reputable industry, not is trying to be a reputable industry, is often denigrated by radical animal rights activists who are just drooling to see this bill passed. But in the handout that I'm passing out, which is called Top 10 Reasons to Vote No on HF 84, there are a number of things. I'm going to try not to duplicate what other people have said here today. There are another number of things that that need to be stated today. It adds on this. I'm going to just go down the list, but I'm going to just talk about a few of these. First, it adds unnecessary regulation, inspections, licensing fees, and taxes to small family businesses like mine. If this bill goes through, I will not be able to support myself if I downsize to the 9. I will either have to downsize to 9 dogs, or I'll have to go up to about 50 dogs. So what this bill does in effect, actually, for serious hobby breeders who are actually breeding one breed and serious about it, most of them have between 10 to 20 dogs. Okay, they're either going to downsize and only breed one line. That's going to promote inbreeding and breeding of and genetic problems and things like that. It does nothing to further address animal neglect, cruelty, or abuse that isn't already in current law. It does nothing more to protect consumers than current law. It doesn't take breed differences into account for standards in determining licensing requirements. For example, a pet breeder who has 10 chihuahuas, those chihuahuas may only have one or two puppies per litter, and maybe they have 10 litters a year, so maybe they'll have 20 to 30 puppies a year. They're going to be judged under the same guidelines as somebody who has 10 golden retrievers and may have 70 to 100 dogs a year. There are huge discrepancies that are created by breed differences. Some of the specific things in the bill, it creates mandates that are ambiguous and difficult to measure or monitor, like the daily enrichment and positive physical contact ones that have been discussed. But another thing that hasn't been discussed is it requires the Board of Animal Health to dictate veterinary protocol, which should be overseen by individual veterinarians. For example, I try to keep my kennel as holistic as possible. I do use traditional veterinary medication when it's necessary. However, I also use essential oils, and I use all non-toxic cleaners in my kennels and things like that. The Board of Animal Health will now be dictating what the veterinary protocol is rather than our own personal veterinarians. And if I'm using a holistic veterinarian, I should be able to get the advice from my personal veterinarian. Another thing it does is it gives an unfair advantage to secondhand pet sellers, rescues, shelters, and so forth who compete with breeders and will not be required to follow the same standards. And an example of that is actually AHS, who sells hundreds and hundreds of puppies, probably thousands of puppies, every single year. Not only puppies, but adults. They're not going to be covered under the same restrictions. And quite honestly, those people who work for those organizations which have a clear financial conflict of interest, you have to question the credibility of their testimony in these hearings. It will cause most serious hobby breeders like myself to either go out of business or to go big just to justify the new expense of requirements, leaving mostly large USDA breeders and backyard breeders. So either the small breeders who are just putting a couple dogs together are going to be out there breeding, or the serious people are going to get bigger. And what's going to happen is really what a lot of people don't want in this bill is that we're going to be seeing a lot more larger organizations or larger operations, a lot fewer medium-sized serious hobby breeders. This next line speaks to how it's going to harm consumers, actually. It's going to decrease the availability and increase the price of well-bred pets in the state of Minnesota, thereby harming the consumer. It's a basic law of economic law, economics 101, of supply and demand. When you reduce supply and you have a great demand, the price of things goes up. And we're seeing in states that have passed these kinds of laws, like Iowa and Missouri, we're seeing a huge reduction in the number of breeders. And even in Minnesota, because of government regulation at the federal level, we're seeing huge reductions in the number of breeders. And in just the last few years, my prices have tripled. It's not going to be long where it's going to cost consumers $5,000 to $10,000 just to buy a purebred dog. So it's going to have a negative impact on the state of Minnesota. A study that was done, an economic impact study that was done by the Calvary Group in the state of Missouri, showed that in the first year after Missouri passed a similar law, that they had a 12-month net loss of about $80 million in the state. This is not a good law. Some of the people who spoke before me talked about a lot of facts that are being, or things are being presented as facts that just simply aren't true, that the writers are trying to use to support this law. And I think that those things should be studied, and that this law should go to a task force to study those things to see if it's actually relevant.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, and I think we have one person from the public maybe that is interested in speaking. And we really are out of time, so I'm just going to ask you to keep it very brief. And state your name for the record, please.
Thanks. My name is Lindy Forstatter, and thank you so much for your time. I'm a hobby breeder of Shetland sheepdogs. And I have a friend with Patterdale Terriers who sent me a story about how her friend had a surprise inspection of his kennel and a mother dog with young puppies. And the mother dog was quite stressed to the point where she actually killed her puppies, even though they found no violations in the inspection. A dog is not a cow. They are sensitive creatures, especially raising their young. It's a very delicate situation, and I just think that inspection is a problem. I've had inspections every other year at my house, and the guy who does it is a part-time construction worker. I have an animal science degree. I have 3 years experience as a pet groomer. I've been breeding dogs since 1987. So I don't feel that the government coming into my house and telling me what to do is appropriate in this scenario. I mean, it's nice that you would have veterinarians maybe do inspections, but it's still an invasion of privacy and an unnecessary use of public dollars. And I'm very grateful that the USDA has stepped in to do more widespread inspections of the very large breeders, like the 36 ones in question that are larger, and that the state law can cover the smaller breeders adequately. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Faust, you're going to be off the hook on your legislative district report for today, but you wanted to make a comment before we vote.
Well, the excitement will mount as I get ready to do my legislative agri report next time. Yeah, I can come back tonight. It's so exciting. Yes, but I do want to take a moment to compliment Representative Lesh and thank him for his willingness and his hard work in getting the groups together to make this finally come together. Unfortunately, it sounds like we don't have support of everybody in the industry, but I think that we do have come a long ways, and I gave my word that I would support this if you got the groups together that started out working on this, and you've done that. And as one fellow representative said this morning in the hallway, nobody loves it, so we must have done our job on this. And so I think that's where we're at. And but thank you for all of your work on this. I think you did a great job in bringing a lot of people together anyway. So I think we're at the point where we've come to the best place we can be on this. I think some of the last testifiers did bring up some points that you might want to consider as it moves forward, but I hope that we can pass this today.
All right. So I'm going to House File Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And real quick, Representative Lesh, we had talked about this bill and the compromise. There's some provisions in there that are extremely important to stakeholders. One is data privacy. If anything like that has changed dramatically, will you pull the bill, oppose it and pull this bill? The other one is if this morphs into something other than pet breeders or dogs and cats. Will you pull the bill? We had this conversation in the hallway, and I'd just like you to answer that question.
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, Representative Hamilton, yes and yes.
Thank you.
I would like to move House File 84 as amended be referred to the Committee on Environment, Natural Resources, and Ag Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Meeting adjourned.